And welcome to the September 8th, 2020 City of Black Diamond Planning Commission meeting, and let's stand for the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States
of America,
and to the Republic in which it stands, one nation
under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. And if we could have the roll call.
Commissioner LeConte.
Present.
Commissioner Jensen.
Here.
Commissioner Butt.
Here.
Commissioner McCain. She's excused. Commissioner Ekberg.
Here.
Commissioner Amber.
Here.
And Commissioner Olson.
Present. All right, so a couple notes before we begin. When we're doing the Zoom calls here, it is sometimes harder for Karina to note which one of us are speaking. So please make sure that we say our names before we start speaking. And also when we make motions and when we second motions, so she can get the right person for having made the motion. So we'll move on to the approval for the August 11 minutes. I'll entertain a motion if everyone's had a chance or if there's any discussion.
Oh, this is Dave. I'll move that we accept them.
Commissioner Jensen, I'll second.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And motion's carried. All right, we currently don't have any oral testimony. All of the comments that were submitted for today, as today's meeting would have been by September 7th, 2020. Have we received any comments?
No, I have not.
All righty. So then we will move on to the study work session, and I will hand the floor over to Barb.
Thank you. And before we do get started on the agenda items, I at our last meeting, we had a discussion about whether or not we could start taking public comment through this virtual format. And at that meeting, I said, gee, I was just following what the city council was doing in terms of having people send in the written material for their comment. But the commissioners, you asked me to check into that. And I do want to report to you and also to the audience here tonight that at our next month meeting, we will open up the public comment like we did when we were in person. We're still going to be doing virtual meetings, but what we will do is call for the public comment, and the audience will explain how they can raise their hand if they want to speak. But that is something that will be different at the next meeting. So hopefully that'll help folks have an opportunity that that maybe they didn't feel like they were having to just talk to the commissioners about different issues. So that being said, that'll take place at the next our October meeting, and we'll start that. I will go into our agenda tonight. There was a lot for you all to read. The three agenda items that we have to work on tonight, one of them is the draft amendment to the Black Diamond Municipal Code, Chapter 1524. That title of that code chapter is Flood Damage Prevention. We also have proposed draft amendments to Chapter 1910, the Black Diamond Municipal Code. That's our sensitive areas ordinance. And then the final agenda item is we began work on our comprehensive plan amendment. You know that you passed the recommendation for a docket. City Council approved the docket as you forwarded, and so now it is coming back to you to actually begin working on the substance of these amendments. So the first agenda item is the memo that's in your packet. Oh gosh, I don't know. It's not numbered, but anyway, right after the minutes, you have a memo from me that's subject draft amendments to the Black Diamond Municipal Code, Chapter 1524. That memo explains, or at least, you know, hopefully explained what you are about to see with the attached draft code amendments. Just briefly, as a background for those who may not have had an opportunity to read, or also you may have questions about this too. Flood regulations are overseen primarily by the federal government, and by they have agreement with the State Department of Ecology. So the flood regulations that are required, cities and counties are required to have, they have to meet what they call model code language. That is, that's basically where an agency with higher jurisdictional authority will say, these are the regulations you must adopt. And this flood language for the Flood Damage Prevention Code is just that. And the purpose is, of course, that the federal government, FEMA, they want to make sure that the regulations are the same across the board everywhere. And non-compliance with adopting their language results in a person not being able to purchase flood insurance. So the participation in the National Flood Insurance Program, the NFIP, that is the result of not adopting FEMA's model code language. So and I don't know if they have a schedule, honestly, for when they do things, but it's happened, you know, in sort of this periodic thing where FEMA will start looking with ecology. They start looking at what they call the firm panel maps. And these are the, basically, we know them as the flood maps. I think a lot of people in different trades have seen them. You may have even seen them with your insurance agent if you have ever dealt with flood properties. And so every so often then, based on historical events that may have occurred, FEMA will go through and look at these firm panel maps, these flood maps, flood hazard areas, special flood hazard areas is what they refer to them as. And they make updates based on, you know, if something has flooded that didn't flood 5 years ago or whatever. And we commonly think about that in the planning world is, things are in the 100-year flood zone, they're in a 500-year. FEMA has sort of changed the language away from that, but that's still like the way we think about it. If it shows up on a map that you're in a 100-year floodplain, then if you try to get a mortgage on any property that's in a 100-year floodplain, you will be required to get flood insurance. In our city, Black Diamond really has hardly any area that's mapped by FEMA as a flood hazard area. Just a little bit on either side of Rock Creek, actually, very small. And in fact, and this is, you know, we don't permit anything in the floodplain, unlike, you know, I've worked previously in Lewis County where the whole darn city is in floodplain, so you can't avoid that. In Black Diamond, we do not have properties that are developing in the floodplain. That being said, we still are required to adopt this model code language. So the pages that are after that memo, they're entitled Draft Revisions to Black Diamond Municipal Code, Chapter 1524, Flood Damage Prevention Code. What you were looking at when you reviewed the material is the actual code language that's adopted with the changes, proposed changes, the model code languages, and I tried to highlight it, to call it out, to make it easier as you were reading through, but you would notice that the new language is going to be in red text, but underlined if you didn't have a color, if you printed it out or whatever, but also I highlighted it. For the most part, our flood regulations were very, very close to what FEMA wanted. The things that we were lacking and that we need to change to be compliant is a lot of definitions. And I don't know that we necessarily need to go through page by page. I think that it may be beneficial if commissioners, you have certain questions, that we could just open the floor for discussion. We will need to hold a hearing on this. And so this draft, after talking to Department of, because what I had to do is we had to send what you're looking at, had to go to FEMA and had to go to Ecology. They had to come back with some comments. They had a few comments. So the public hearing draft will be slightly different than this, but I'm just wondering, how would you like to discuss this at the workshop? I mean, do you feel it's necessary to go through page by page and discuss each of the changes, or are you pretty comfortable with just asking questions based on what you've read and maybe something that came up in your mind that you'd like to talk about?
Commissioner Amber, it seems just like a whole bunch of bureaucracy. I mean, if FEMA's requiring this language, Black Diamond doesn't really flood. I don't see, I mean, there was nothing in there that stood out to me as oppressive or obnoxious. It just seemed like a whole bunch of bureaucratic nonsense. So I'm happy. I'm not going to argue with any of it.
It is very bureaucratic. You got that right. Any other commissioners?
Yeah, this is Commissioner Eckberg.
Mm-hmm.
Reading one of those sections, I can identify it specifically, but it talks about dry flood-proofed. What does that mean?
In the definitions, dry flood-proof?
It's in the non-residential construction, page 21.
Okay.
B1, second to the last line.
Let's see here. Let me get there. I think I know what you're referring to, but I want to make sure.
It just seemed odd. I didn't understand that.
So Commissioner Eckberg's on page 21. And B, where it talks about non-residential construction, and then this. So the B flood-proofed, so that below 1 foot, that is all existing language in the code. The only thing that is being proposed as new language is that last partial sentence, or dry flood-proofed to the elevation. So dry flood-proof is a specific building code term.
Okay.
It means something to a building official. It means something to a builder, someone in the trade, where floodproofing a perimeter has, there's different ways to do that. You can apply a certain treatment, a product to dry proof it, or you can do, mainly it's a product, a choice of a product that you treat the actual siding with to make it be floodproof, so the water can't seep in.
Okay. Seemed odd.
Yeah. That's a building code term.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
So, Commissioner Olson, so then you mentioned we would need to set up a public hearing for this.
We do need to set a public hearing for it, and there will be, in that public hearing draft that goes out, will have some changes from this draft based on the comments that I received back from FEMA and the Ecology representative. We would want to set a hearing. So we currently have been kicked out of the NFIP program because we didn't get this adopted. We have one person in the city that holds a flood insurance policy. It was interesting because they were only insured for $12,000. So when I talked to the FEMA person, they were like, this is very strange. And at any rate, that whoever holds that policy should be fine as long as they their policy is active and it's paid up to date. But if they wish to renew when it expires, if we don't get this adopted, they wouldn't be able to renew their policy. So yeah, we want to hold a hearing. I would like to set that hearing for our next date, planning commission in October and get that noticed so that we can hear, take public testimony and make a recommendation and forward to the City Council to consider adoption.
All right.
Go ahead, John.
No, go ahead.
Commissioner Jensen, I was just curious. So what action do we need to take today to move forward?
Well, today, we just need to recognize on the record that you're comfortable with this workshop and you're comfortable with setting a hearing. You don't need to take formal action to set a hearing.
Okay.
But just letting the public know for transparency that this is what will happen next month. And it sounds like you are all comfortable with that. Am I right?
Yeah, I
don't have a choice, so.
Yeah, that works with me, Commissioner Butt.
All right, this is Commissioner Abreu. I'll make a motion that we accept that.
Okay, so then Barb will get that scheduled and for the next meeting on the 7th?
That's correct, yep.
Do we need a motion and a second, or just we just all agree to move forward?
You could do it either way. Since there's a motion on the floor, we should probably finish out.
I'll second the motion.
All right. So it's been moved and seconded that we all agree on the amendments to the public, or having a public hearing on the amendments to the Black Diamond Municipal Chapter 15.24, 19.10, and then the 2020 Annual Comprehensive Plan Amendments for Chapter 3 and Chapter 4. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, motion carried.
Thank you. So the next item of business on your agenda is the draft amendments to the City of Black Diamond Chapter 1910, the Sensitive Area Ordinance. The Sensitive Area Ordinance is something that...
Barb, this is John. I apologize. I lumped that in with the last grouping, but... As it stands, unless we have any disagreements, we'll just include that all moving forward. Does that work for you?
Sure.
On the last motion, I mentioned that. So.
Oh, good. I'm hoping that we would be ready to hold a hearing on the sensitive area ordinance next.
Okay. Okay.
Well. Yeah, yeah. So the Growth Management Act, part of it is the requirement not just to have your comprehensive goals and policies done, but also there's a piece of it for what they call critical areas. We call them sensitive areas. And that ordinance is part of being GMA compliant, part of this whole important planning work that we do. And We did our comprehensive plan amendment update and got that done, but we also must adopt our changes to the sensitive area ordinance to make sure that what we have adopted is consistent with the state, any state rules that have changed or any changing conditions. And so the Department of Commerce puts out a checklist. And what we do is of all the things that they expect to see in a sensitive area ordinance, staff, with the help of a consultant, we go through that checklist and we go through, you know, line by line and what we have in our code and look for, do we have it? Where is it located? Oh, we don't have something. And that's the process that we went through to get this draft that's before you tonight. So there are, for the most part, what we had adopted in 2009 is quite good. The science is good. We don't have a lot of changed conditions that would require us to go back out and look for doing new, what they call best available science. That's the part of the sensitive area ordinance that maps, wetlands, and all of the, so sensitive areas are your wetlands, your geological hazard areas like slopes, and in Black Diamond we also include coal mine hazard areas. your streams, wildlife, habitat areas. Those are all what we must look at as regulating development for the purpose of making sure that we're protecting, you know, the quality of our environment. And so its sensitive area ordinance is extremely important. And we, in 2009, the city adopted all of this science, meaning that all the kind of the field work and all of the bodies of literature that support the regulations in this code, and those are still valid. And we did not need to go out and do any more of that. But what we did find is that there were some things that we needed to tweak. And again, this draft is highlighted and underlined the new language strike through. But mainly it's, if you go kind of maybe, I think we might want to actually walk through this one just because I think this one is worth just sort of chatting through as we walk through. But on page three, 1910.010, the purpose, you see that we added, and the comments are here too, so you can understand why they were added. But you see this sentence on 1910.010b, the sentence reads, currently, to limit development and alteration of sensitive areas to achieve the goal of no net loss of sensitive areas or their functions and values. We've added through both regulatory and non-regulatory measures because that was in the checklist as a good idea. I mean, ecology and commerce both, they draft these checklists and they say, this is something you have to have. This is a good idea. Well, we know in the city of Black Diamond that we do strive to promote the protection of our sensitive areas. We have our regulatory codes, but we also have been working more and more on these non-regulatory measures. So we wanted to add that sentence so that would give us the authority that is needed when we, for example, next year, we may be talking more about open space areas in our comprehensive plan and how to incentivize people to set more open space. I mean, that would be an example of a non-regulatory measure. Sure, we can say like, nope, can't do it. But it's also really great when you're trying to work with, in a community to reach goals that you have, things that are also non-regulatory that incentivize people. For example, the transfer development rights that we have now, that's a non-regulatory measure. Someone can willingly strip the development rights off of their property and someone buys them and puts them somewhere else. Well, those development rights that they're taking off of a property, those are properties that it's a benefit to the city and the community not to develop, to save them. So that's an example of a non-regulatory measure. So that sentence, adding that sentence for that was on the good ideas for ecology in their checklist. And so we're proposing, yes, we agree, that's a good idea. The city does it, and it's good to have language that speaks to that. The next change that you have, if you go down to 1910.030 in your draft document, that's on page five. You see that we've added B because this is the language about the frequently flooded areas that we didn't have. It ties it to this, to the code chapter that we just talked about, the flood prevention code 1524. So that's proposed to be thorough, like, you know, we're trying to really make sure that our code is cross-references other chapters that are important, and this is one way of doing that. We know that frequently flooded areas are sensitive areas, and we're saying by adding this language, oh yes, but we treat them in this chapter of our code. You won't find any discussion in 1910 about the flood damage prevention code. We tell the reader you're gonna find it in 1524. At any time that I'm talking through this, and you have questions, by all means, just stop me. I'm going to just keep going through. And unless I'm stopped and you want to ask me questions as I'm going through it.
All right, Commissioner Amber, on this section here, you need to change the old C to a D.
Yeah, absolutely. We got to fix that lettering there, don't we?
Let's see. And how does the transfer of development rights, I mean, what good does that do if you've got property that you really can't develop anyway, like that swamp around where the Ravensdale Road meets the 3rd Avenue meets Roberts Drive. You got that little swamp where next to Provident Electric.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing can really be done there because it's, you know, kind of a swampy area. I mean, all you can do is fill it in, but I think that was a sensitive area, but you can now transfer your development rights from some actually other sensitive area onto that area. Is that how that works?
Well, the transfer of development rights is a 1924 in our code. And basically what that has years ago, I don't know if you can remember kind of back to when we were talking about this with the comp plan map, but the areas that were sending sites and the areas that were receiving sites, they were identified and mapped through the city. And those sending area sites were basically, yes, if it was, there were certain criteria to make it, to try to incentivize somebody to not develop that property, they could put a permanent conservation easement on it, or at least on the area that that has the sending site, because it has some benefits for the environment. It could be a wetland, it could be, you know, it could be a historic site too. Those are also sending areas. And then they put this permanent conservation easement in perpetuity on it, and then they enter into an agreement with a buyer. The buyer buys these certificate that says they have rights to densify their land, but they have to use those. They have to have a receiving area to be able to use those. So yeah, that's basically how that works.
I didn't follow that very well, but
it's another topic for another day though, Commissioner. I think that, yeah, that TDR program is very complicated. I shouldn't have even said that as an example of a voluntary measure that people can take, but it was the only thing that popped into my head at the moment. We're moving on to the next change in the code that's being proposed, which is on chapter 8, where we're talking about the allowed activities, 1910.060, allowed activities in sensitive areas. We're not proposing much different here. If you go down to 4 for forest practices, it's kind of near the top of page 8. You'll see a highlight, you'll see some underlined new language that we're proposing. It says, so the 4 reads right now, forest practices, these practices are governed by a valid forest practices permit granted by the Washington State Department of Natural Resources. And then we added, and subject to the requirements of Black Diamond Municipal Code 1528140. This was a checklist item for making sure that our sensitive area ordinance was consistent with the forest practices rules by DNR. So what it's just saying is not only, if you're going to do forest practices, not only do you have to comply with the DNR forest, because DNR will issue a permit for people to do forestry, but you are also subject to the requirements of our code. It basically, we're just saying you you can't ignore Black Diamond's code and say, I've got my DNR permit, I can do what I want. That's why we wanted to add that. And that was something that was missing. So that's why we're proposing that. That's kind of that belt and suspenders item there. Moving through the document.
This is Commissioner Ekberg.
Yes.
My internet dropped. So I was out of touch for a minute. I'm on the phone now. So I'm not clear on where you are right at the moment.
We are working through. What was the last thing that you heard, Commissioner Ekberg?
Well, we'd gone through and approved all of these sections, all three of them, in the past. And then soon after that, I think Commissioner Amber was talking about something. And then my internet dropped. This is about 5 minutes ago.
We were starting to talk about the sensitive area ordinance amendments, just kind of walking through the first couple pages of those.
Okay.
Yeah. And now I'm scrolling through and then, yes, go ahead.
So you were on page 5?
Yeah, we were on page 5.
1910.030.
Mm-hmm. And do you see the underlined language being proposed? Okay.
I've read through all this and everything looked good except where I noted, which we haven't gotten to.
Okay. Good. So I'm still, you can see we're not proposing to make a lot of changes here.
Yeah. I was worried that looking at the scroll bar, there was going to be, hundreds of pages of documents to review. And fortunately you did a really good job of highlighting what the changes were.
Good. I was hoping that would help. So the big one for me, and the big one for, people that do this sort of review and permitting is found in 1910.210 on page 32. We currently do not require the applicant to use the most up-to-date wetland identification and delineation manual. That is that's important because that's their checklist on how so when someone is a wetland biologist or a wetland specialist and they have to go out in the field, we are requiring the applicant to provide a wetland report. This wetland specialist goes out with the Department of Ecology manual. They go out and basically field proof the wetland and identify it, delineate it, which means flagging it. And so we want to make sure that they're using Ecology's most up-to-date manual when they do that and not an old one. So that's why that change is being shown on 32. Let's see.
Commissioner Amber, and these changes won't affect any existing permits?
No. Mm-mm. And then you go down to page 33, where you see, again, a change in the date, wetlands. Other wetlands are rated according to the following categories based on the criteria provided in the Washington State Wetland Rating System for Western Washington. And then we have that the correct date. It's a 2014 document and the correct reference to the publication. So those are necessary, obviously, for us to be asking for the most up-to-date reference material to be used.
Commissioner Amber, do we have to put the date in there, or can you just say the most recent?
You actually do have to put the date in there. So
every time there's another revision, we have to approve that?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, it's just being really specific in this code is important because there are a lot of revisions, different publications that Ecology puts out. So we want to make sure that there's no question about what we're requiring from the applicant. Then scrolling through,
I think 19, 10, 3, 10 on page 57.
Thank you. I just don't want to miss anything since we're walking through it. 57, that's the next one. Great. Should have had these pulled out, but then sometimes I get confused if I pull things out of context too. Okay. So page 57, there's the WAC. We had a bad WAC reference for the bald eagle habitat. So we just corrected the WAC, Washington Administrative Code reference. And that's obvious that we need to make sure that we have the correct reference. Okay, what's the next one here? Who does anybody know off the top of their head as I'm scrolling through?
Page 80.
Commissioner. Page 80. Commissioner Eckberg.
Thank you very much. Normally I would have a piece of paper to flip around, but this is not, I'm trying to go paperless. I'm trying to train myself. Okay. So then this page 80 where we're, there's quite a big section here of new language, because we're talking about in 1910.340 mitigation requirements. And you know, mitigation is done in a sort of this sequence of, you know, you try not to impact at all, try to avoid. And then if you have to impact something, you're gonna have to do mitigation for it. So we're adding a section here, section I about the mitigation, the priority species for priority species and priority habitats. We did not have anything that talked about, you know, you have your habitat and species that are protected by under state and federal, but you also have local species and priority habitats. So we haven't really, this is a part of protecting the fish and wildlife habitat in conservation areas. We haven't spent a lot of time actually talking about these local species. We know we have them, you know, we know we have elk. Elk isn't protected, but as you heard in the, I don't know if you remember when we were doing the natural element in the comprehensive plan. I mean, there's a lot of people that want to make sure that we have some protection in place for the local habitat. And so this section, by adding this section, it would read the habitat species that have been identified as priority species or priority habitats by the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife Priority Habitats and Species Program shall not be reduced and shall be preserved through regulation, acquisition, incentives, and other techniques based on, but not limited to, the management policies in the Black Diamond Shoreline Master Program adopted. So this is linking this to the shoreline, which we did that earlier this year, the update to the shoreline, or maybe it was the end of last year. And we know that there are, we know that, you know, in the shoreline environments, but also there are other, you know, creatures and plant species that we may want to be able to consider the protection of those. And this language lets us reach a little bit broader if we need to, in terms of maybe conditioning an application that may have the presence of a priority habitat or species. So it just speaks to that, being able to maybe condition an application for preservation, or maybe acquisition of land or some, you know, non-regulatory incentive for protecting these priority species and habitats. And so those are, again, those are not protected under the regulations that we have in place now. So that's what that is doing. That was something that was in the checklist. And so that's why we put it in here.
Let's see, Commissioner Amber. All right. So let's say there's a bald eagle couple
mm-hmm.
that has been nesting and raising young in an area for quite a while. And it's in the... it's within the city, and it's like, say, 20 acres, and somebody wants to come in and put, it's zoned one house per acre, and somebody all of a sudden wants to come in and put in 20 homes.
Mm-hmm.
And the Eagle family uses this area, and developing that area could drain and damage their feeding area where they get their food. How would they be protected with this? Or does this protect them? Is this something used for that kind of thing?
Well, it certainly could be. I mean, it's where you're going to look at, it's another layer, I guess, how I want to characterize it. This language provides another layer of protection, and that it could be something like a condition, your example, conditioning that to somehow minimize the, you know, let's just say that the lighting or noise or expanding a buffer away from the trees, or there could be, yes, this would give us another layer of protection, another tool, I guess I should say, in the toolbox to use at this, as the planners, as we're looking at these applications and we recognize that there's a need to pull out another tool or have some other resource to protect that eagle family.
But would the city do that? I mean, who makes the decision on that?
Well, so depending on the application itself, if it's an application that's processed as an administrative decision, that it would be, you know, me, basically, the staff planner is going to be looking at that. And, you know, if it's something that I'm reviewing and, you know, you would likely see this sort of red flag, I guess, or maybe not a red flag, but you would see this popping up if in a SEPA checklist or in a shoreline permit application, say someone wants to build a dock or something like that. In the review work, that's when we look for everything and we look to see that the proposed development is not impacting the sensitive areas. That's what this code is all about. And in this particular case, you know, if there's evidence of some species or habitats that ought to be protected in some way, then that's our job to make sure that those regulations are are in place. Either the applicant is his or her application is conditioned in some way. I mean, but that's the job that we have as the permitting authority. And so, yeah, we do our job.
Okay.
Let's see then, what's the next page, commissioners? I'm scrolling through, it's
fast. Commissioner Eckberg, 113.
Hey, thank you. This is handy. Mm-hmm. should just break down and hook up a mouse. I would be a lot faster in my scrolling.
I use the page down key on my keyboard.
Does it work a lot faster than the, I've got one of these. Is it faster?
Very fast, much okay. Faster.
I'll try that on the next. So one, thank you. So 114 is in definitions 1910, 600. And so we are looking at a 1910, 613, and 614. We didn't actually define critical areas or the critical aquifer recharge areas. So we needed to have those, again, addressing the checklist category for our overall requirements. We're required to have those, and that's why we put those definitions in here. And plus, definitions are so important, and to have them written well and be as extensive as possible, because people, that's what you turn back to as you're reviewing things, and you need to know that everyone needs to understand what it is that the definition applies to, because as you know, we all have different ways of speaking and we all have different understandings and interpretations, and so definitions are so important. But this critical areas, it's kind of interesting to me that we didn't have one before, and now we will if this goes forward and it gets adopted. And then also for the critical aquifer recharge areas, a lot of people wouldn't even understand what that a lot of times they call it a CARA, C-A-R-A. A lot of people have no idea what that means, but now anyone who wants to look it up, they can say, aha, now this is something that's, it's a protected area. You know, you don't, critical aquifer recharge areas are mapped, and there's typically an area that's protected to make sure that no contaminants get into drinking water. So anyway, any questions on these two definitions? And then you see as we're going through all the numbering changes, and then we get down to page 115, 1910, 623. We're adding this, a definition for the fish and wildlife habitat conservation areas. We did not have that in our previous code. We're adding a definition 1910, 626 for frequently flooded areas, so that people know what that is. In 1910, 630, page one, bottom of page 116, we did have a geologically hazardous area, but she doesn't have the strike through on here. So this is new language, but I'm pretty sure we have one in the code, and I apologize if that strike through language isn't showing up. Let's see if I can bring it up. Nope. Well,
Commissioner Ekberg, yeah. I've got a comment. I don't know if it's important or not. It mentions or other geological events.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean for Black Diamond, we're mostly concerned about sinkholes in mining areas?
Yeah, we do have some.
Do we need to mention that, or is that not, would we just use the catch-all and call it geological event?
I think we're probably okay with that. I mean, if we wanted to get more specific, we certainly could,
Well, it's kind of unique to Black Diamond.
Mm-hmm. I think it's not a bad idea to talk about I can never pronounce this word, but yes, the coal mine hazard areas. We should add that. I mean, that is, you're right, very unique to the city. I am open to changing that 1910, 630. I think that's a great suggestion by Commissioner Ekberg to add in there coal mine hazard areas.
It doesn't. Commissioner Amber, I certainly don't think that I think that's a good idea too, because that takes any question out of it that that is a geological hazard.
Yep.
That is existing.
And this is Commissioner Ekberg. Someone mentioned, I don't know, maybe it was Gary, that there are sinkholes mm-hmm. in Black Diamond.
There are.
And that might be the other thing to add into this section as well.
Yeah, I think that what I would probably do, Commissioner Ekberg, is say, you know, kind of generally I characterize coal mine hazards such as sinkholes, I can never pronounce this word, it's S-U-B, sub, it means when that sinks.
Subterranean?
No, subs.
Substrate?
Say that again?
Substrate?
No,
subsurface.
No.
Submarine?
Subduction?
Yeah, it's like subduction, but it's not that word. It's like, but it does mean that. It means like it sinks. It's not just like a sinkhole is a specific, you know, it's a sinkhole, but you have this settling that occurs.
It creates a depression?
Yeah, it's going to sink. It's going to settle, sink, because there's in the coal mine, the ribbon, if it was mined out and it wasn't collapsed, then it can basically, it's not a hole, but it's still sinking. The ground would still sink, but it's not a hole. I'll have to Google the word but I was just thinking we could put coal mine hazard areas such as the including but not limited to the following, that sort of language. Sinkholes would be listed. How does that sound?
And then everything you just tried to say?
Yeah, and the word that I can't remember. Yeah, we've got, I'll probably pull out from the existing section in this 1910 that goes into detail about the different things that can happen for coal mine areas. Hazardous.
Subsidence?
What?
Subsidence?
Yes, thank you. That's it. Subsidence. Yeah. That's
subsidence.
Subsidence.
Subsidence. Subsidence.
There we go.
There we go. Okay. That's a great great direction. Are all the commissioners on board with adding that in?
And yeah. Now we all know how to say it.
Yeah. Then we have 1910-631, where we oh, I see what happened here. Okay, the cross out on the, so 630, the geologically hazardous areas, the existing definition is down here, crossed out under the 631 language. All we had in our definition for geologically hazardous areas were areas designated as geologically hazardous areas due to potential for erosion, okay, blah, blah. So basically what we're saying in 630 is this language is, it's just a little better. And then 631 habitats of local importance, that's just brand new. Because I think that we do want to start thinking more about our creatures in Black Diamond that are important to the community, and that we want to make sure that we're working towards trying to maybe identify those and think about some protections for them. And again, the elk just keeps coming to mind because we hear a lot about folks that testify at different things and how, how sad it is for them to see, you know, that they feel like these local species are being pushed out by development. So having that definition to start with will really help us when we move ahead and start working on open space, maybe open space corridors next year and that sort of thing.
Commissioner Amber, seems kind of interesting. Mine collapse was crossed out and we kind of added that back in.
Yeah. We did. And so we're just not going to take that consultant's recommendation, because I think we need to have it in there. And you know, it's probably, we're going to be a little more, we're going to be a little more general.
Yeah, I think what we came up with was a little better than Mind Collapse. It encompassed a lot more.
I think so too, yeah. So really, that's it. That's all that we're proposing to change in the sensitive area ordinance. I think that it would be, you know, we're going to hold the hearing on October. It will be very nice to hear from the community and folks that I know. We've got a lot of people passionate about the environment. And so this will be the draft that we put forward with the change in adding that coal mine hazard area. But to hear testimony next month from folks that may want to, they may want to bring up something that they think that we missed or we may want to add. So that is all I have to say about that. Any other questions or comments or discussion on this before we move on?
Since you've got a quiet moment, Gary Davis, I noticed that you appear to have got the wrong date for your Tuesday.
Hey, Gary, I'm sorry, you're out of order. But I'll check that date.
Zap.
Yeah, okay, so.
Well, that brings a great opportunity to when we start our public comments next week.
Yep.
Are we having public comments? Isn't that on the agenda for the end of the meeting today?
It is on the agenda, but there really is nothing more to discuss since we're changing it for the next meeting. Isn't that right? Did I get that right, Barb?
I'm sorry. Say that again.
The public comments for the next meeting, we're going to have testimony.
Yes. So we'll go. So next meeting, we're going to be holding two public hearings. But we'll also have that section where people can just give their comments about anything. Doesn't have to be testimony on the hearing. So we will have lots of opportunities. We'll open the meeting and you'll just call for any just general public comments, and people will be able to speak. Then when we open the hearings, we'll be calling for public testimony, and people will unmute their mics and they'll be able to give specific input to the subject of the hearing. And so then when we close those hearings, and then we always, before we close the meeting, we have that second opportunity for just general public input. Yes.
Right. And then did you want to go over the chapter 3 and chapter 4 changes?
That's the last item. Yes, we do, because I started us all kind of gently here on our comp plan amendments. If you remember on the docket, we had two items that were really housekeeping. They were these chapter 3 and docket item number 1 to chapter 3, docket item number 2, which was to chapter 4. And what had happened is when we were formatting after the passage of the comp plan, we were formatting the document and we inadvertently omitted language. I think that some of it was moving pictures around in Word, in a really big Word document. So what this docket item 1 is just to add this language back into chapter 3. You see that on page 3 at the very top. Highlighted. In addition, the City of Black Diamond is committed to providing equal access under Title II of the Americans with Disability Act, the ADA, for parks and recreation and trail system. We never intended to delete that language. It's very important language to have in this chapter 3. And so I would like to add it back. The other docket item 2, we had a policy that in the natural environment section where we use policy NE21, use low impact development techniques to manage stormwater runoff. We never intended to delete that. And so we would like to make sure that that gets back in this round of amendments.
Commissioner Amber, when did that get, what year did that get deleted?
That was in the, that was after the passage of the, you know, that was when we adopted in May of the update. So that language should have never been deleted. It was, like I said, when we were formatting the document and making sure that typos were gone and everything, somehow that language was, I think in one of them, I went back, it looked like a picture, covered it up when we moved things around. When you're formatting Word documents, I will never do that again to try and format a really big Word document, but lesson learned. It was just happened last year. It happened in the final, it happened after the document got adopted, basically.
All right, Commissioner Amber. So prior to that, we never had a policy about low impact development techniques.
No, that's new. Yeah. Our comp plan update, we added these, we added policies to use low impact development. That's correct. In the 09 one that we updated, we didn't speak to that.
Okay. All right. I don't have a problem with either of those.
All right, great. So as it stands, then all of these items will go out for the public hearing. And we will receive comments on that.
Not on the amendments yet. What we're going to be doing is workshopping. So this is the first two docket items to workshop. These were the easy ones. And then next month, we'll start with the workshopping the remaining docket items. Remember, we want to talk about the land use. We want to talk about aligning, maybe bringing a policy in to help us align with those growth. So we'll be working through on comp plan until I anticipate having a hearing in November on the package of amendments for the comp plan.
Commissioner Amber, so the policy that you want to add back is down below as policy 21. Is the low impact development techniques, is that a constantly updating thing, or is that a set of techniques that we have to look at all the time?
Well, the low impact development techniques are, they're adopted by the Public Works standards, but we also could consider, we don't really have much in like building code or zoning code. We don't have much in there that really talks about, a regulation for low, that you must do low impact development. Where we find it, where we have that is in the adopted Public Works standards, this like the stormwater manual. So if someone is doing a project that triggers stormwater, they're going to be required to look at low impact development.
Okay, but are those specific
things? Yeah, specific tools. Yeah. Okay. Like green infrastructure, they call it over gray infrastructure. So the nice thing about having this language in here too is that it gives the, so if something isn't triggering stormwater, it does give the planner, reviewer, permitter an opportunity to maybe add a condition that might not other be required in code, that they would need to use a certain, technique like, like a rain garden instead of a hardscape detention sort of pond. I mean, that's just a very broad general, but yeah, low impact development is, they are specific techniques that are captured in the stormwater manual, and an ecology has a lot of guidance about those.
Okay, and as new techniques come up, are they just automatically included in that, or is it like that previous thing that we did where it has to be updated every per like that 2014, it has to be according to the 2014 manual, or is this just automatically updating to the newest techniques?
Well, this is very vague and general, the way that this policy reads, but the city does have to adopt, like I said, the real regulatory side of this is in the Public Works Stormwater Manual and regulating this stormwater. Those manuals have to be updated when they come out with new ones. Yeah.
All right. Does anybody else have any questions about these three topics we covered today? All right, then moving on to unfinished business. We had public comment discussion. We've already taken care of that. Does anybody have anything to add or want to discuss anything? All right, so then we move to the Community Development Department report.
Well, thank you very much. We will have two hearings next month. The department itself, we are looking for we have a council approved hiring or going out to recruit for a senior planner position, which will be very helpful. We in the department, I don't know how many of you know, but it's just me. I have an assistant planner, Joey Portman, and he backs up the permit technician. And I've got one permit technician, a building inspector, and a building official. So we are stretched thin, and the Community Development Department is responsible to do a lot of things. So I'm really eager and hopeful that we can recruit a good planner to step in and help with that. It's very odd, but people are just so busy out there, even with COVID. It's like the world is speeding up instead of slowing down. And so we're busy with permits, building permits. We're busy with planning permits. And meanwhile, we really want to be able to focus and do a good job on this long range planning stuff. The current planning has just really sucked a lot of my time, and there's a lot of work that we can do on the long range planning, and looking forward to being able to help us really focus on that. The things that we put in the kind of the parking lot list for all the great ideas that came out when we did the comp plan update, you know, working on our open space, working on our design guidelines, you know, there's just so much that we have to do, and I'm eager to get started on that.
Well, it sounds like you're busy.
We are, yeah, but you guys too. A lot of work for you on the horizon here.
All right. Well, I think everyone's ready to get back to some normalcy.
Yeah.
Even if we're stuck behind this machine.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Commissioner Amber, I'll make a motion that we adjourn.
Or was that Barb's? I'll second.
Was that Barb's complete report?
Mm-hmm. Do you want more?
No. No.
I'm dying here. That's my report.
All right. Well, we're all dying.
That was your report, right, Barb?
Yeah, it was. Okay.
I'm a little quick to the trigger sometimes. All right, so I believe the adjournment was moved and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And opposed?
Excuse me, John. Can I ask who seconded?
Commissioner Butt, I seconded.
Okay, thank you.
All right, moved and seconded, and all ayes and no opposition. So I think we are adjourned.